And welcome back to a supplementary Three Amigos podcast. We teased it earlier, so if you haven't heard our main podcast, the hour version where we talk about Claude Julien's dismissal, his subsequent hiring by the Montreal Canadiens, and the Boston Bruins trade rumors with the NHL trade deadline rapidly approaching, why don't you go check and listen to that? But we did say on that particular podcast that we didn't want to drag it out by introducing our new Ask the Amigos feature in which we solicit your questions posed to us, and we do our best to answer them. I've done a iteration of this in the past, just myself on the blog with an audio mailbag, but audio mailbags are always better with friends, and so I have Dominic Tiano and Reed Duthie with me rounding out the Three Amigos, and we are going to answer some of these questions that came to us via Twitter over the last few days. The first question we're going to tackle is from Paul Simoneau at PA Simoneau, and he asks the three of us, given Malcolm Subban and Zane McIntyre's struggles, are there concerns for the Bees' depth and net? How do the Bees approach in trades draft, and he's meaning on the goaltending side. So, guys, I'm going to pitch it over to you. Whoever wants to grab this one and chew on it first, you have the microphone.
Go ahead, Reed.
Well, I don't know that I'm all that concerned. I see a lot of worry and consternation about that's word of the day calendar, by the way. About what's going on between the pipes for the Bruins past Tuukka Rask. And as a lot of people know, I've been fairly tough on Tuukka Rask because I expect him to be the franchise guy. But that's, again, different topic for a different time. Zane McIntyre to me is going to be the guy, the next one for the Bruins in the group. And what I noticed wasn't mentioned in the question was Daniel Vladosh, who I think is also going to wind up being a pretty good goaltender in his own right. So I'm not overly worried about the Bruins going out and acquiring another goaltender. I'm kind of hoping that Anton Khudobin has a bit of a rebound. The game against Vancouver was a good start to building something back for him. So I'm not as concerned as some are. I wouldn't mind seeing them dip into the draft to add another goaltender. Next year, obviously, they're going to need to figure out who the backup netminder is going to be and whether Zane McIntyre is ready to rock and roll in that spot. So there are questions to be answered, but I'm confident personally in Zane McIntyre, guys. He's just, from the time we talked to him, from what I've seen him play, I really do believe in that kid, and I think he's going to be the next one in line for the Bruins.
I'll agree, and I'll add that a lot of people have given up on Malcolm Subban. I personally have not. The biggest argument I hear is, well, you know, McIntyre has passed him on the depth chart, blah, blah, blah. It goes on and on. It's the same story every day. Well, you know what? I would be, you know, and I mentioned this on a site today, is I would be disappointed if McIntyre didn't pass Subban. He's older. He's been playing the position a lot longer. Let's not forget that Malcolm Subban didn't start out playing goaltender until later. He had a rough start to the season. His injury last year didn't help him, but he's coming along now. That said, in this draft, if I'm looking at this draft, I consider taking a goal. And to me, the simple answer is yes. Not in the first round.
No.
In the second round, there's enough quality goaltenders out there, and I mean top quality goaltenders, that you can pick out a very good goaltender in there for, you know, 3, 4, 5 years down the road. And let's not forget, Tuukka Rask will be in the twilight of his career there. And because it's such a weak draft, or not so deep draft with on forwards and defensemen, that this is the prime draft to nab one of those goaltenders.
Yeah, no, absolutely. You've got good goalies in the CHL, whether we're talking OHL with Michael DiPietro or or we're talking WHL with Ian Scotts and the Stuart Skinners. And then, of course, my area, USHL, is just chock full of good goaltender prospects this year. Keith Petruzzelli from Wilbraham, Massachusetts, played at Springfield Cathedral High, Selects Academy, now starring for the Muskegon Lumberjacks. We call him Petruzzilla, 6'6" goaltender who can really move, has the fluidity and grace. Just a monster in the net, for sure. Caden Primo, Keith's son, another quality goaltender coming out of the USHL. You've got Jake Ottinger up at BU doing good things. I know that the loss in the beanpot stings a bit, but he's still a heck of a goalie. Dayton Rasmussen is another impressive name. He plays for the Tri-City Storm. He's coming up. He's going to play at Denver University. Just an athlete. He's got to improve his technique, but a pure athlete. And so many more goaltenders. And then there's some depth. I mean, you can get good guys later on. Like, I've heard about good things about Caden Fulcher. The Omaha Lancers have a kid named Tommy Napier who's a second-year eligible. This guy's good. I see quite a bit of Tommy Napier, and I will just tell you, this Ohio State recruit, he is under siege every night. Omaha is not a very good team, and yet he just makes big saves, and he makes it look easy. I see ability, I see size, and I see mental toughness. And so I would not be at all surprised if Tommy Napier is another sleeper goalie you could get later on in the draft. So lots of depth in this class, and I've got to think the Bruins will come away with one or two of them when all is said and done.
Let me throw one more in there, guys. Dom, you'll know him fairly well. Kirk, I don't know if you've seen him. For the Niagara Ice Dogs, Stephen Dillon. He rolled into Hamilton last weekend. He was unbelievable. Just absolutely unbelievable on a not-so-good Niagara team. He is carrying the mail, and he's just a battler in there.
But I'm going to throw one even better at you, look at the Sault Ste. Marie Greyhounds, and I'm not talking Joseph Raymakers, who was passed over last year, but Matthew Belalta. And I've been on record many a times throughout the season saying that this guy is going to take over the number one from Raymakers as the Greyhounds make the push into the playoffs. And, Raymakers hasn't won a game this month. Belalta's lost one in six starts this month after going 16 games without a loss of any kind. And I'll tell you, for Sue Greyhounds, who Reed, you and I are probably a little bit surprised they didn't go get some goaltending depth at the trade deadline, because they're a very good team who could give any of Windsor, London, Erie, and Owen Sound now a big run in the playoffs. But Matthew Belalta is going to have to be their guy, and I'm telling you, this kid can carry them.
I'm actually fairly surprised they didn't make a run at Dawson Carty, but that's, again, that'd be a side note.
Yeah, there's another goalie that you could get in later rounds that I'm a firm believer in. And I'm with Kirk. I think that the Bruins will go out and grab one, maybe two out of this draft, because let's face it, it's a goaltender strong draft and not so strong in other areas. And then it gives you chips to trade later on.
Yep.
Yeah, no doubt. There's another question. It didn't come to the Amigos, but it's a pretty good question. It comes from someone called Boston Pucks, and it says, talk about the Bjork signing with Bees. And this is, once again, a chance for us to kind of talk about the process and the possibility for it. So he wants to know about, what are the odds of Bjork signing with the Bees after this after his season ends in Notre Dame? And then we'll get to Trent Frederick a little later on. So what do you think, guys? Bjork, will they not sign him? What do you see happening when his season's over?
Well, the first question that they're going to have to answer is going to be whether or not he actually wants to come out this this offseason, and or whenever Notre Dame's season ends, whether he wants to step out of university or whether he wants to go back for a senior season. So that's your first issue. Secondly, you've also got to figure out whether or not he is a guy that you're going to consider moving in at a trade deadline as a chip. And third, you've got to obviously put together a offer that both sides feel is fair to be able to get him under contract. But at this point, I wouldn't be overly concerned about him. This is one of the ones that bugs me, is seeing that, wow, what if he goes the Jimmy Vesey route? Well, what leads you to believe that that's going to happen? If you don't have any evidence, then, you know, my father was an RCMP officer. If you don't have any evidence, don't come to me with it. It's one of those kind of scenarios that I just don't understand why people are getting so upset about it before they literally know anything to do with the situation. He could be a very good signing for the Bruins, but we don't know the inside of what's going on. Granted, I think we'd all love to, but until we know something concrete, there's no point getting upset about it.
Yeah, I don't think Donnie Sweeney is the type to go out and push him to come out of school. I think they'll ask him, what do you want to do? And they'll judge accordingly, go there. Let's not forget, they have until August of 2018 to sign him. So, you know, the Jimmy Vesey route, I don't even consider it until we get into April of next year, and then I'll start worrying about it. Like I said, I don't think they'll push him to come out, but a lot depends on what they do this trade deadline. If, for example, they go out and get a Gabriel Landeskog, there's really no reason to push him to come out. If not, and he wants to sign, I think they'll sign him. And, you know, Kirk, you brought this up many a times. It's the new negotiation tactic under the CBA is they'll let him play a couple games, burn a year off his entry-level contract, and that seems to be the new route that that agents are taking with their clients. And like I said, the Bruins will act accordingly once they know what Bjork's wishes are.
Yeah, I call it boutique leverage. So, you know, so for example, you've got a kid, you've got a client, he's a really good college player. You know that you're an agent. You know that there's a very good chance that he is going to attract a lot of interest, bidding interest as a free agent, and it's close enough that you're willing to wait. So, team comes calling, and it's like, hey, you want to sign now? Great, but here's what it's going to mean. You're going to have to burn that ELC to get him to come out. You know, you're going to have to guarantee X number of games in order to get him to come out. You know, we're going to want some assurances, you know, down the road that he's going to be in the team. So, you know, all that stuff. And if people think that's being unreasonable, well, they just don't know business very well. That's just how this stuff works.
Classic example was Tanev in Winnipeg, Kirk.
Yeah.
A different situation because he was a free agent and, you know, Boston was on his list. It's just they couldn't give him the opportunity to contract like Winnipeg could.
Yep, no doubt. I think on the odds on Bjork, I mean, as the guys mentioned, just to wrap this question up for Boston Pucks, everyone wants projections and they want predictions. You know, hey, is he not going to, what's it, you know, and all we can do is basically give you the surmise that, hey, look, the bottom line is there are some decisions that have to be made. If he makes a decision to come out, then obviously they're going to sign him because he has no other options. So what we have to do is we have to wait and see what happens at the end of the year. If at the end of the year there's indications that Bjork is ready to come out, as was the case last year with Danton Heinen, and don't forget, Scouting Post broke it, Dan Heinen will sign when he plays his last college game. Unfortunately for the Bruins and the fans, they went all the way to the Frozen Four, so it took a while. Okay, that stuff will start to leak out. When we hear that he's willing to come out, then it's pretty much fait accompli. He's going to sign because unless his rights are traded to someone else, He can't sign anywhere. This is not Jimmy Vesey's situation. Jimmy Vesey would be, if he goes back for his senior year, now the clock's ticking and all bets are off, because then he plays that senior season and then he can wait out from the end of that season until August 15th and do the Jimmy Vesey thing. So odds, not ready to give you odds. We need to figure out what his next decision is. But if he does decide to come out, and he seems to have been pleased. What I'm hearing behind the scenes is that he's comfortable in the Bruins organization. They were the one team that told him before the draft that, hey, we see you as a much better scoring player than the role you had at the national team. We don't agree with the way you were employed. We think you were underutilized. We really like you. We have high hopes for you. That means a lot to these competitive kids. You know, when a team says, hey, you know, you were drafted in the fifth round because you were pigeonholed in X role, but we see you as being capable of a lot more. And I'm told that that really meant a lot to him. And he's been driven to prove the Bruins correct in their assessment of him. And so I hear they've got a really good relationship, but we won't know until we know. So I would just say, you know, folks, sit back, watch it play out, and, you know, we'll see what happens, okay? So next question comes from Adam Peterkin. It says, may I ask you three what you feel is the best approach for the Bruins to take at this deadline, please? Well, very, very polite, Andrew, and for that politeness, we're going to go ahead and take this one on. So we did talk trade deadline a bit in the previous podcast, but this is a slightly different flavor because it's talking about the approach. And I think in the approach we can talk, whether we're talking Landeskog or we're talking trading for more fringe veterans as they've done in the past or unloading picks or whatever, what the strategy might be. So, Reed, this sounds like something that might be up your alley.
Well, I've never turned down a chance to play armchair GM before. So my first move would obviously, as I mentioned on our previous podcast, I call up Joe Sakic and say, Joe, I need number 92, and I need him now. I want Gabriel Landeskog on my team. From there, obviously, that's going to necessitate another move, because if you're going to put Landeskog on this team, there's just not going to be enough minutes to go around. So is there somebody down to the fourth line that may interest a team somewhere else? Now, I'm not interested in giving up Dominic Moore, but is there somebody in that group that there's another team that could look and say, maybe we could add him to our group, and that would be a nice push for us. Could the Bruins find a way to acquire a draft pick or maybe a prospect that's down the road a little bit that they can put in the back of the line and have to come through eventually? Failing to get Gabriel Landeskog, if that just won't work out, I would still look at my prospect pool, and as Dominic mentioned earlier, we're not going to have room for all these guys. Is there a defenseman available that would then help us move forward this season and in the future? If there is, and I'm actually not even at this point considering Kevin Shattenkirk, because if you look at the right side for the Bruins, once you put McAvoy in there, there's not a whole lot of room for right-handed defensemen with Colin Miller as well in this group and Adam McQuaid too. Is there somebody on the left side that you could bring in that would be able to help you eventually bridge a gap when Zdeno Chara moves along? And can I use my prospect depth to be able to gain that player? So I think there's a couple of avenues they can go down. At this point, I'm not overly interested in a rental player, just because of, you look at the Bruins when they're healthy, the forward depth, where are you going to put a rental? And why would you disrupt what you're seeing on the ice right now for that rental? So I'm kind of on the other side of that. Last year, I was supportive of the moves for Stempniak and Lyles. But this year, I just don't have an interest in adding a rental. So Landeskog first, and then maybe a couple of fringe moves around the edges to move somebody along. Failing that, a defenseman for my left side. But outside of that, there's not a whole lot that I would do. Maybe you need a backup goaltender if Hudobin isn't able to carry the mail behind Rask. But there isn't a whole lot that I really see the Bruins doing at the deadline, to be honest. I think they're kind of in a spot where they can feel pretty good about themselves this year and down the road if the trend we're seeing continues.
I'm going to take a different approach to it. If I'm Donnie Sweeney, I'm looking for exactly a Gabriel Landeskog-type player. And by type player, I don't mean the style that he plays. I'm talking a 24, 25, 26-year-old player who has enough term on his contract remaining and is reasonable that he's going to be around for 3-4 years. Barring a trade like that, then I do nothing. And I wait until the offseason when there are teams like Minnesota or Anaheim or Pittsburgh, or, I mean, the list goes on and on, Chicago, that are going to be desperate to be moving players pre-expansion draft. And it, barring that a trade deadline, those are the players I target in the offseason.
Yeah, no, makes sense. I don't have a whole lot more to add. I think, you know, we've talked about it before, Dom. We've got a lot of prospects in the system, and they can't all play. So at some point, the Bruins have got to start culling the herd a bit. And what's so important, this is where player development and evaluation is critical. They've got to identify the right folks to move out, because if they move some good players out and those guys go on to hit big time elsewhere, oh, man. You know, fans are just going to kill them for that. So
it's not an easy task.
It's not an easy task. No, no, not at all. So I think they've got to make some deals where they got to thin out the prospect crop a bit because, oh, by the way, we got another draft right around the corner, and our next Ask the Amigos question will deal with that. But we have another draft around the corner. They're going to add more picks, more players. You know, it's now kind of a juggling act on timelines. You know, you got to draft guys that are, you know, going to need more time to develop and are going to be on the college route. That's why places like the USHL are such gold mines for scouting nowadays, because more and more teams, because they hold those NCAA player rights longer than they do, you know, before a contract is required than others. And of course, you know, with the contract doesn't toll till they turn pro for the junior kids, but still, it's something they think about. The longer timeline for a team like Boston that has veteran, you know, a pretty established veteran roster, and then so many young kids vying for spots, they don't want to draft guys that they're going to have to be making decisions on really quick. So it's fascinating. I think we could see some more picks moved out because, again, the Bruins don't need a lot of picks as long as they use the ones they have on the right players. And I know fans like to have tons of picks because more is better and it keeps them active and engaged in the draft. But the Bruins, you know, let's just run the numbers. Last two drafts, 5 first-round picks, okay? 4 second-round picks, okay? We've done that. We don't need to stockpile the picks anymore. Now the team needs to get serious about who's going to stay, who's going to go, who's going to help the team, who's not. And just having tons of draft picks is great on your mock drafts and draft time when everyone gets excited, but it's not going to get the Bruins back into contention any sooner. So that's my piece. Anything to add before I move on to the next question?
No, the only thing we will add is your falls into that category as well, Kirk.
Yeah.
With the NCAA, just to throw that in there. And, you know, the Bruins have a greater presence in Europe now. So, you know, if all things are equal between an NCAA player, a CHL player, and a European player, they have to lean Europe or they have to lean NCAA just because of the timeline required.
Yeah, no doubt. So here's a fun question for the three of us. It's called Bruins at Big Brad Bruins 94 asks. It's a ways away, not that far away though. But if each of you had to pick one favorite draft prospect coming up, who would they be? And I'm going to let you guys lead it.
Reed, I'll let you go first because I kind of know who yours is going to be.
One? I got to pick one? Oh, jeez. Is this first round or is this anywhere in the draft?
Well, he didn't. I think he's assuming first round, but I would say pick a first rounder, and then if you have a player that's actually your favorite, that's not a first round projection, just go with it. I mean, it's our podcast. I'm sure It's Called Bruins would be happy to hear about any players we have, and I was going to take the approach of first round choice. I would like to see, and then some other players that I really have time for later on.
Well, I think I know who Dom is expecting me to say right off the top in the first round, but I think
I'm going
to
agree with you. I know who you're going to say, and I'm totally on board with you.
Well, actually, no, I'm going to go a different direction because I had a chance to watch him play over the last little bit, and I have started to really fall for Christian Vesalainen, and I think he's the kind of guy that playing in Europe in the Frölunda system. He's been loaned back to his home country of Finland for the moment, that I really think he could be an impact player down the road for the Bruins. They can afford to let him develop in that tremendous system. Frölunda just won the Champions Hockey League again. It is an elite program in Europe, and they would be able to let him learn his way forward and eventually come over to Boston and make an impact. Now, Dominic, maybe this is the guy you're thinking I'm going to go with. Mackenzie Entwistle. He's going to fall down the draft board. Unfortunately, he's had mono, and it's going to keep him out until almost the playoffs. The Bulldogs will be looking forward to having him back, but he's a guy, although he's a CHL player, that is going to take some time because next year will really be his show year when Nicky Petty and Michael Cramarosa graduate from the Bulldogs. He's going to have to step up into a top six role. And what we saw of him this year, when healthy, when this team was healthy, he can be an impact player. He's got the size. He skates incredibly well for that size. He can play the wing or center, and he can drive the net. He can play the penalty kill. We've seen him on the power play. When he stands in front of the net, it's like blocking out the sun. This is a very multifaceted player who has a potential ceiling that is quite high, and I think his floor to an NHL level would be a third-line player. He could be a penalty kill specialist for years in the National Hockey League. I'm very excited about the future of Mackenzie Entwistle, and I think he's going to fall, and the Bruins could find him somewhere as a steal.
Yeah, and you know, fans who don't get to watch him saw glimpses of what he's capable of in the top prospect game. You know, that driving to the net, the goal he scored, the empty net goal, just getting in there to try and negate an icing, cause the turnover, and seal the game. You know, I love everything about the kid. And, you know, there's not much else to add as to what you said. So, Mackenzie Entwistle's, you know, one of my choice, but my favorite has to be Michael DiPietro. I just can't say enough about him. The only downfall with him is his size, and the go to the big 6'5" goaltender these days. But everything about the kid just screams winner. He hates. Not only does he hate to lose, he hates to give up a goal. And when he does, man, he comes back twice as strong as he was. Just an amazing athlete, sheer will to win. And the guy I mentioned earlier, probably my second favorite, is Matthew Bulalta. I won't get much into him because we've already discussed him, but he's another one of my favorites.
Yeah. Cool. So Kirk still likes Casey Mittelstadt for the Green Bay Gamblers. He's actually back playing Minnesota high school, but he's going to return to the USHL when his season ends. Just a tremendous, tremendous player. He's taken some steps back. I think the high school season, you know, domination was expected and didn't quite work out that way, so his stock's taken a little hit. But I just keep going back to what I saw him do in the under-18s. He's a center, very versatile, high-end hockey sense and skill, and just able to make plays and create a lot of things out of nothing. Good character kid. And so, yeah, maybe, you know, unfortunately, where the Bruins are picking, they're not going to have a shot at him, you know, if they can continue to play as they are. And, you know, who knows if they'll even have a first-round draft pick come June. We'll have to kind of wait that one out as well. But, yeah, I like Entwistle as well. I can only see him on film. It appears my colleagues in Redline are warming up to him, Reed. He's coming around. He was featured in our Rising section for the February issue. So that's good to see. And some other guys I like that maybe in some of the later rounds. When we're talking goalies, if the Bruins could somehow end up with Keith Petrozelli, that would be a huge get for them. He is just, I mentioned him earlier, and he is a physical beast, 6'6", but with terrific athletic ability. He's got to get a little bit better on his edges and his balance. You know, his skating is just okay, but he just blocks so much of the net and is very tough to beat on the first shot because he just doesn't give shooters anything to work with. But he's also fluid and agile enough to where he can get, when they're moving pucks laterally, he tracks really well and he's able to get post to post pretty nicely. He's really shooting up. I think he's got tremendous NHL upside, and I imagine he's going to go sooner rather than later. And then, you know, there's this guy down that's he's further down the boards. He plays for the Lincoln Stars. His name's Sam Sternshine. He's got some Zach Sinishin in him. Doesn't have that explosive first couple steps, but he does, when he gets up to speed, like to motor past defensemen in the open ice and cut to the net sharply and then just, you know, deke goaltenders out of their jock and score. He's really come on since he was traded from Cedar Rapids to the Lincoln Stars, and he's a guy to watch as a later round sleeper, and I think he would be a nice investment of the, you know, of a later round pick for the Bruins if they had any interest, because he's a right winger, and like I said, he's got a little of those Sinishin attributes. He's headed to Penn State, so he's going to be on the long boat to China in terms of development, but a good player. So Boston Pucks, I should say it's called Bruins. Hope that answered your question. Pretty good question there.
Just to add to that real quick, Kirk,
yeah,
and you already have it up on the scouting post. It won't affect this year's draft, but in 2018, watch out for the USHL with their import draft rule being changed to being able to add two extra Canadians to the roster or one extra Canadian goaltender. I think we're going to see USHL teams fill those import spots with Canadians. It won't affect Major Junior that much, but it'll affect Junior A. And for those looking to go the NCAA route, and like I said, you have a post up on TSP there if people want to read up on that. But like I said, it won't affect this year, but 2018 and going forward, fans may want to pay attention to that too.
Cool. Thanks, Dom. So do we want to get to Brock Otten's question now?
Sure.
Okay, so a good friend, Brock Otten, runs a great blog, OHL Prospects. Asks the question, who is the better NHL prospect, Trent Frederick or Ryan Donato? Now, Brock, thanks for that question. I'm going to field this one because I've had the pleasure of seeing both gentlemen, and it's tough when you do the who's better, either or, because they're still pretty early in their development. The way I'm going to choose to answer this question is to take a slightly different route and say they're two completely different players. So if you're talking about what is your team value, if your team value is size and athletic ability and two-way offense and defense capability, the ability to play effectively in all three zones and use your size to drive the net, to protect the puck and possess in the offensive zone, to box out defenders as a net front presence to establish yourself in front, just outside of the paint, to set up screens, deflect shots, be able to work the puck back into possession in your own end and speed the transition game, then Trent Frederick's your guy. You couldn't ask for a better fit in that regard. You can't teach his 6'2". Frame, and it's going to only get bigger. He's about 205 at the draft. He's probably going to play at 220, 225, I'm told. He's about as pure an athlete as you can get. He was a three-sport star before he focused exclusively on hockey. Baseball and football were his other sports. So he's a guy that I'm just told is the sky's the limit. Like every time he goes for any kind of physical contests or evaluations, you know, his numbers are off the charts. So in the modern NHL, where puck possession is such an important part of the game, you know, he certainly has a place, and you can begin to understand why the Bruins accepted a lot of risk by going way off the board to take him at 29 when they did. Now, Ryan Donato. Ryan, if you believe in the ultra-creative playmaking and scoring center who can play with pace, who will go in and can skate through the entire team and has the determination and the will to take pucks to the net and score goals, highlight real goals, if you believe in a guy that has grown up around the pro game, knows exactly what it takes to make it, and when some was falling short and had some shortcomings in his own game and conditioning, and those were pointed out to him, really put in the work to address those shortcomings and impressed a lot of people during the NHL Combine because he had made so much progress. If you believe in a guy who's just a good, talented player who has leadership ability and is going to be able to energize your offense, then Ryan Donato's your guy. You know, both players are very good, but I don't think you can make an either-or assessment of them at that time. So there's my point, and guys, feel free to weigh in with your own observations.
Well, I like them both, and I remember just a week ago watching the bean plot, and I messaged you guys and said with a simple holy blank, Ryan Donato, that goal was just simply amazing. And you told me then, Kirk, he says, you know, that's what he's been doing for a couple of years now. So, you know, a pleasant surprise to see it with my own two eyes.
I love the narrative on both. Trent Frederick is obviously proving people wrong. So much anger and hatred towards the front office when he got drafted. And, Kirk, you even said it. You weren't on Trent Frederick, but when we were breaking it down, you said, well, let's give the kid a chance before we lose our minds about the selection. And so far, he's done nothing but turn heads and really have people sit up and say, wow, this kid might really have something to him. And on the other side, Ryan Donato, and unfairly so, and I would be guilty of it as well, he gets lost in the shuffle of all the prospects that have been added to this system that at times you almost forget that, one, he's there, and two, he's really good and really talented and a lot of fun to watch. And I've kind of tried to make it a personal mission at this point not to leave him out when I talk about top prospects for the Bruins moving forward. But again, these are the kind of guys that make you so excited for the team's future. And I'm with you, picking a better than which one. I think because they play such polar opposite games, it's hard to say which one's better, which one, you know, because the NHL has moved towards a Ryan Donato type player, smaller, faster, more creative. But at the same time, like you said, you can't teach the size of Trent Frederick. He is going to be a monstrous player by the time he gets to the NHL. And don't want to put, you know, too much on his shoulders, but he will look like David Backes when he comes into the National Hockey League, just in terms of pure size. That's the kind of player that you're looking at. And, boy, it's very exciting to have both of them in the system.
Yeah, no, great take, guys, great take. Yeah, it'll be interesting to see. And, you know, it's tough. Everyone wants to, you know, who's the best, and there can only be one, as they said in the Highlander, right? There can be only one. But yeah, the Bruins certainly have some depth. We got a question from Adam O'Terry, who's a supporter certainly of the blog and on Twitter and all that, and he's an HF boards guy. He asked a question about Brandon Carlo. He said, what do you think of Carlo and the hype surrounding him? What should Boston be realistically expecting to get in a deal where they move him? I figure it's worth a shot. So, boys, what do you say?
Well, I think that that fans have to cool expectations, and let the player progress. What he's able to bring back in a trade, I mean, who knows? Who knows what the discussions are behind closed doors? Certainly we don't have access to those talks, but I just see so much overhype from one group of fans and so much undervaluing from let's say the Colorado side. It's probably somewhere more in the middle. He's thrust into a top pairing role this year, but I don't see him as a top pairing guy, you know, going down the road. Second pairing, yeah, but I don't foresee him as a top pairing.
I'm going to take this a bit of a different way to answer the question, Dom, and I'm going to say so much of what this question relies on is what other teams believe that Brandon Carlo is or could be. You could have two front offices, brilliant front offices with great scouts, and they could both sit there, and one front office says, we see him more along the lines, to use what Kirk had said on our previous podcast, we see him more along the lines of Kyle MacLaren. He's going to be a really good NHL player, but he's not going to be a great NHL player. He's never going to lead a blue line. He's going to be a really good complementary piece, a top four defenseman that's going to log minutes, but he's good. We can find a player of the same caliber through the draft. Okay, that's fine, and there's nothing to say that they're wrong. On the other side, you could have another front office that goes, is he Shea Weber? I think he's Shea Weber. I think we found another Shea Weber. We got to call Boston and get that guy tomorrow. So it all depends on which front office that the Bruins are on the phone with. Does Colorado say, we think we've found a stud top pairing defenseman? Or are they going, he's okay. He's all right. We like him, but he's not gonna throw us over the top. And I bring up Colorado just because that's the team that's in the major trade rumors, but that could be any front office, and that's where you're stuck at. We don't know, one, we don't really know, honestly, how the Bruins value him. Obviously, they're going to come out and say, we love him, we think he's great, da-da-da-da-da, because they don't want to devalue him to himself or to anybody else. And other front offices, we're not going to have any idea who thinks he's the next coming of Shea Weber and who thinks he's Kyle MacLaren. So it all depends on who you're dealing with and what their assessment of him is.
Yeah.
Yeah, you can't argue with that. You can't argue with that.
Yeah, no doubt, boys. Well, let's see. Do we have any other questions we can pull up and get to, or is that about it? I think I'm not seeing anything else. So, you know, this has gone about 40 minutes, so I think we're in a good spot. We've probably done our duty. Appreciate the people who submitted questions. If you submitted questions, we missed it. Sorry. You know, I've got to get better. What I think we'll do is we'll do a hashtag Ask the Amigos. So if you have an actual question for us, ask the question and use hashtag Ask the Amigos. That way we know and I can favorite it and we can save everything, because I was kind of having to scroll through the timeline and kind of pick out stuff, and stuff that was asked a couple days ago probably didn't quite make it through, and I apologize for that. So we'll try to get to it. Bobby Messenger asks a question about Lindgren. Is he playing a big role? Yeah, you know, he's fine. I would say for a true freshman, he's playing a big role. But more to come with him. Lindgren's value is going to be established in next year and the year after that going forward. I mean, you know, again, got to watch out for too much too soon. Just because you're 18 years old and you come into a new team and you're a, you know, second round pick doesn't mean it's ready to happen right away. The numbers are down, but he's playing. He's playing minutes. He's getting experience. I think certainly he'll be elevated to a bigger role going forward with Minnesota, but just look at the things he's done and some of the things he's accomplished, and he's doing very well. So appreciate the question about Lindgren, but you know, again, don't read too much into, you know, the numbers, you know, one goal, five assists or whatever. I mean, it's just like not everyone gets to come into college hockey and dominate right away. And if that's what you're believing, you know, unfortunately, our fast food mentality system, people just kind of expect that. Oh, you know, because we have so much access to numbers and stats and hype, and we can compare people like we never have before. And so a lot of times that happens. So Lindgren is, I think, progressing right where he needs to be. And the real proof will be in the pudding next year and the year after when we see what he's doing there. So, guys, we'll pitch it over to you to close it out. But again, I hope people liked the Ask the Amigos segment. And if you have questions, you know, shoot them our way in the future, and we'll do this again sometime. Guys, over to you.
Yeah, thanks everybody for the questions on Twitter, and hopefully this will continue to grow. We can keep doing this kind of segment, and any questions that you have, we'd love to take a shot at them and answer them as best we can.
Same here. Thanks everybody for the questions. You know, we're not always as smart as you people think we are. We try our best, and we don't have all the answers, but we feel we can answer. We certainly will give it a good shot, and if at only one thing you get out of it is our opinion, then you'll get our honest opinion. It's not something that we make up or pre-plan beforehand. It's spur of the moment, honest answers, and I just hope you appreciate it.
All right, guys. Well, for the three amigos, myself, Kirk Ludeke, and Reed Duffy, Dominic Tiano, thanks for joining us. Thanks for listening. Thanks for your support. For more on the three amigos and more on hockey, we have posts and guest posts and all sorts of things over at thescoutingpost.com, scoutingpost.com, and have a great time wherever you are. We wish you the best. Enjoy the season. And we'll catch you on the flip side. Out of here.